Welcome to Perspectives. I'm Joan Herman. The focus of today's show is a movement begun relatively quietly in 2006 to, quote, promote empowerment through empathy among women of color who had experienced sexual abuse. But it wasn't until the fall of 2017 when actor Alyssa Milano took up the simple hashtag of #MeToo that the movement exploded as a way to reveal personal histories of sexual harassment and sexual violence. The hashtag would be reposted millions of times over, exposing abusers at the highest levels of society, particularly in the entertainment industry, and prompting Time magazine to single out the movement's silence breakers as the magazine's Person of the Year. Joining me on the show to speak about the Me Too movement, as well as the pervasiveness of sexual harassment and sexual violence, particularly against women, are Dr. Margaret Frimuth and Mindy Stokes. Dr. Frimuth is the Vice President of Academic Affairs for Clatsop Community College. She previously served as Director of the college's Lives in Transition and Counseling Programs. She also is the founder of the Healing Circle, which puts on the annual VOCA Camps, or Victory Over Child Abuse, dedicated to healing childhood sexual violence. She holds a doctorate in transformative studies from the California Institute of Integral Studies. Mindy Stokes recently became the director of the college's Lives in Transition program. She has taught courses in the college's Women's Studies program since 2010, and she co-chairs the board of directors of The Harbor, a local nonprofit agency that provides advocacy, prevention, and support for survivors of domestic violence, sexual violence, and stalking. This program was pre-recorded. Welcome to the studio, Margaret and Mindy.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
To start, I'd like you to just explain a bit more about the Me Too movement for somebody who might have been in a cave over the last year. Margaret, why don't you start?
Well, I think from my read, the Me Too movement really was fertilized by some dissension that was experienced by particularly the progressive movements, where instead of being able to move forward, there was a lot of interruptions to progress. Certainly the election did not help at all. There was frustration. There's a sense of a need to dissent, to stand up, to resist. I think that fertilized the soil for looking more closely at kind of the invisibility of sexual assault and sexual violence against women and children.
And the election you are referring to is of President Donald Trump?
Yes.
Is it any coincidence then that this movement has really taken off under his first year in office?
That's a huge part of the frustration, absolutely.
Because he himself has been accused of sexual violence.
Yes, yes.
Mindy, what about you? How would you, to what would you attribute the explosiveness of this campaign, this movement, over the last year?
Well, first I want to say that movements take years and years and years and decades and centuries sometimes. And that it's important that people keep pushing and pushing and pushing. And victims and survivors of violence have, they've always spoken out. But in this political climate, we are believed now, which I don't know that that has ever really happened on a grand scale. In fact, I would say that it hasn't. And the election of Donald Trump, who has professed to be a sexual predator, and him being in the Oval Office has catapulted this movement, this sexual violence, this movement against sexual violence in a way that I didn't predict. You know, you never know where the tipping point is. And we've hit the tipping point. And my students asked me about a month into this Me Too campaign, or maybe it was a week, and they said, how long do you think this is going to last? And I said, well, I don't know. It could be gone tomorrow, because that's what happens in our fast-moving media, this fast-moving media age. But it stuck around. And I just thought, oh, I'm feeling hope for the first time around this issue. And I do think that with Donald Trump in the White House, and again, this constant dialogue that's been happening for years in certain circles has just allowed this space for women to come forward and to be believed, really, on a grand scale that I have never seen before.
Many of them have identified themselves, and many of them are celebrities. What does it take for somebody, even with a lot of power in our society, to do that? Either of you, Margaret?
Enormous courage. I mean, it is difficult. And in fact, to bring it kind of closer to home, some of the people that have identified with the Me Too campaign on Facebook have also talked about how scary that was and how it seemed only right to add their own hashtag and to talk about their own story. And I think that's part of the healing process. The desire to heal is to tell the story and to be believed. And so within a climate where you're thinking you're going to be believed, I think people who are trying to heal are wanting that, but it's still courageous. And there's still backlash that can happen. And certainly, if the offender is around and doesn't like that you're exposing the story, then the legal system may get kicked into the midst. And there are lots of ways of lying within the legal system. And, the offenders are great manipulators. And so it can be a very devastating experience. I think the numbers of women who are disclosing en masse has created less backlash than individuals who have come forward in the past. So that's progress.
What is the effect on all women today when they hear a Taylor Swift or an Alyssa Milano or some of the other famous celebrities openly speaking out about the sexual violence they have had to live through?
So what is the effect on them?
Yes. How does that affect?
I don't know. I think maybe relief.
Society.
Relief. For me, it's relief. I spoke at the Soup Bowl in June for the Harbor. And in it, I talked about domestic violence and the prevalence of sexual assault. You know, one in four women will be sexually assaulted in her lifetime. One in three girls will be sexually assaulted by the time that she's 18. So I should say one in four women will be raped in her lifetime. And then I also talked about sexual harassment and that one in three women experience it. And we all know what it's like. We all, maybe one in three isn't all of us, but every single person I know, except for one woman I've ever spoken to, has experienced sexual harassment on the job. And so what that does in that moment, you've got some decisions to make. You can tell HR or your boss and maybe suffer the consequences or maybe get some help. Who knows? You can try to laugh it off and try to shove it under the rug. You can confront the harasser and suffer the consequences. There are never any good choices. And what that does for women is that for me, when I've been sexually harassed on the job, then my creative energy goes to thinking about the next harassment or the last harassment. And it goes to trying to protect myself and then protect others instead of allowing me to be creative and be better at my job. And so when women started coming out and were believed, I feel a sense of relief. And I also feel protected because there's millions of women coming out. Mm-hmm. And my story isn't so unbelievable now.
We think of ourselves as living in a progressive time. But what does this movement, the Me Too movement, suggest about our society, our culture, that has allowed this apparently to go on for centuries, and yet it doesn't appear to be getting any better? Margaret?
Well, that's a huge question.
Yes, it is.
The simplified answer that I use is to look at a continuum of how systems operate. And on one end of the continuum, systems operate more in terms of their alignment with domination and strict authoritative roles. And in that system, there's vast inequalities, and greater power is given to white men who have wealth or property. And that's kind of the stereotypical, but it's been going on for thousands of years. It's not innate to us. It hasn't been going on forever. The other side of that continuum is a partnership society that is more equitable, that has leadership that is both male and female leaders. Families are supported. There's lots of resources that are shared so that the whole of the community is enhanced by the equitable sharing of resources. And that tends to be the format of society that's pre-written history. And so it's in us. We are capable of existing in a partnership society, but that's not necessarily what's operational at the moment. So I think the big link for me is that if we are in a system that leans towards domination, and certainly the election of Donald Trump is trying to support that, and the whole idea, the code language of family values is really talking about the man gets to have the authority and make the decisions and everybody else needs to comply or there's going to be problems. That is a system that is going to silence the experiences of anyone who's being oppressed. So to move away from that is to allow voices to surface and healing to happen.
Is this problem worse in American society than other cultures today?
It's worldwide. I mean, there's sexual abuse and harassment that happens worldwide. But there are pockets of places all around the world that operate more in terms of partnership.
What would be some examples?
Well, the Nordic countries tend to lean more that way. Some of the tribal communities operate more in terms of partnership. So there are pockets that we can find in this country as well as around the world.
And we do know that when women fare better, when there mm-hmm. is equity, when there is access to good jobs, education, we know that those cultures and countries do better as a whole. Mm-hmm. And when women are educated and they have good jobs, they put money back into their community and into their children and send their children to school and help others. So we know that. Research supports that.
Absolutely.
Talk a little bit about the Lives in Transition program, which you've directed, Margaret, and now you direct, Mindy. Does that work with these same issues with your students?
Yeah, so Lives in Transition is absolutely the best program on earth. It's the best place I've ever worked. I've started teaching in the department in 2008, shortly after moving to the area. It makes me a better person. It changes lives in profound ways. What we do is we use trauma-informed education and trauma-sensitive environments to educate people on their barriers to success. And those barriers include poverty and racism and sexism and sexual assault and domestic violence. We also introduce them to the college at large, such as introducing them to financial aid and TRIO and the library and all the departments that one needs to connect with to be a successful student. And so we do deliver this really heavy-duty education in very safe environments. And students take that and they develop an internal locus of control and start utilizing a language that is essential to use when you're starting to tease apart these traumas that you've had in your life. And what happens is they identify the barriers, or some of them, and start looking at other options to help them move through those traumas and become successful students and then successful people.
Great. If you're just joining me, you are listening to a pre-recorded interview with Dr. Margaret Frimuth and Mindy Stokes, who are speaking about the Me Too movement, named by Time Magazine as the, quote, Person of the Year, for publicizing the pervasiveness of sexual harassment and sexual violence, particularly against women. Margaret, you look like you had a comment you wanted to make.
Well, I want to use the F word here. I want to talk about feminism. because it is the it's a perfect example of looking at issues of equality. If you define feminism through a system of domination, which is what is often thrown around and berated in social media, then you're going to get a definition that says women just want to have more power than men, which is not feminism. That is a patriarchal definition of what women want to do. So it's men's and I'm not talking about men in general. I'm talking about the powerful elite. That's what the powerful elite, which in this country tends to be white men with wealth, that's what that definition means to that realm, because they're threatened by equality. Feminism means equality. It means that men have as much value as women, and women have as much value as men, and children are valued as our future resources and for the health and benefit of all. And if we don't sort of cut to the chase and say, we've got to start looking at what equality means, and equality means feminism. That's the way to surface equality, is to recognize the value and worth of women and children. And children, both male and female, and a whole spectrum of what gender identification represents. And that, I think that that's the thrust. And for me, that's the way to move this movement forward, is not to move it forward through the lens of a patriarchy, but through the lens of feminism.
How do we educate children so that they understand what feminism means?
I think we look at language as the very first way of understanding the values of a society. And if our language is filled with violent representations, and the people who are most impacted by the violent representations are women, children, and people of color, then we're going to replicate a system of domination. And so to look at our language from many different lenses, I mean, just think about the terms that we use on a day-to-day basis. That was a blast. We even talked about the explosion of the Me Too campaign.
True.
You know, we have numbed ourselves to the acts of violence, and that contributes. And it certainly contributes in the thinking of young children. So that's one
aspect. Does social media make the problem worse?
Both, better and worse. It makes it, it helps in that we can communicate across the oceans. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to see that the same problems are happening everywhere. And it makes it worse in that people who are cowards and sit behind a computer can send out whatever nasty, hateful, violent rhetoric they choose, and they don't have to identify themselves.
Mm-hmm. One thing I've always wondered is why, with the celebrities in particular, if so many people observed what was going on or pretty much had a good idea of what was going on, I'm thinking of Matt Lauer or Harvey Weinstein, how come those men weren't exposed earlier before they were able to commit these acts?
Mm-hmm. So who says they weren't exposed? It depends on who's telling the story and who's in a position of power to be able to make sure someone suffers consequences. And it's exactly what we've been talking about. We live in a society that is a patriarchy, and it's male-dominated, male-identified, and males are at the center. And so when you have that lens, then what we have is a society that seeks to protect mm-hmm. men's experiences and delegitimize women's. I would venture to say that women were speaking out. But again, all of a sudden, we have this environment where women are believed, and it empowers other women to come forward.
And I guess I would just add that if there are male listeners who are offended by the fact that we're talking about a male-dominated lens, then that's the impact on men. So that good, well-intentioned men are impacted by the patriarchy as much as women. And that's part of the transformation that I'm hoping that, I don't know if I'll see it in my lifetime, but I'd like to sort of get some energy behind it so that it can happen. Because inequality holds back everybody, including the offenders.
Explain.
They have more power. They get away with stuff, but is that a quality of life? Is that really being the best you can be as a human being? I don't think so. So we all lose.
Is it just men committing this violence against women?
It's not, but in a culture that has that leans towards domination, it's going to give more benefits to people who are on the dominant side of the paradigm.
Say more, Mindy, about how this affects the students that you work with at the college, mm-hmm. those who have are survivors of sexual harassment and or violence. Mm-hmm.
So how Lives in Transition affects people?
No, how the sexual violence has affected them.
Okay. So what I realized as soon as I started teaching LIT is that I would venture to say 98%, or I would say maybe at the minimum 90% of my students have experienced sexual trauma from an early age, repeated, and or watched their mother being battered repeatedly by their father or her boyfriend.
At least 90%?
Oh, I guarantee it. Would you say so, Margaret?
Absolutely.
And what that has done is that, you know, what we know about children is when they suffer trauma over and over, their brains are wired differently. And so, you know, then these young people who grew up in these with these all this trauma, they have to pick up some type of vice or they have to commit suicide because it's, and I say have to, that's pretty dramatic. But when you're living, when your body's being invaded on a daily basis or regular basis, or the person that you love is, you have to cope in some way. And so then what happens is then they become adults and then they have these coping mechanisms, which are not healthy, and they have children. And then they find themselves wanting to change their lives, and they end up in LIT with all of this history of trauma. And what I find is that they're the most courageous people I know on the planet because they come to class and they bear their soul with all of this baggage, and they want to change, and most of them do with the tools that we give them. And that's why I say it makes me a better person, because it just makes me grateful that I didn't have all that trauma as a child. I had some trauma, but not like that. And I get to witness the resilience of the human soul, and how when folks are ready to change and they're given the safe space to do so and the tools, most of them do.
Wow. Mm-hmm. What motivated both of you to get into the work that you do?
Good question. Well, I was sort of raised in a family that leaned towards social justice issues. And so, the other thing I will say is that I was a beloved child. My parents wanted me and honored the fact that I was birthed and cared for me because that's what they wanted. And for me, that means I have some energy that I can give to solving problems for students that or people that did not have that experience, because we all deserve that.
Absolutely. Mindy?
So what motivated me? Well, I grew up in a very sexist, racist, homophobic household.
Other side of the coin.
And my mom, you know, oh God, she loved me. And she used to say, this was in the 70s, you know, and she'd say, Mindy, when you grow up, you don't have to cook for any man. You don't have to clean for any man. You don't have to get married. You don't have to have children. You can be a doctor. You can do anything you want. And she gave me that hope. She may not have modeled that, but she gave me the language to know that I wanted something else. And because of my own experiences and my Feminist theory was one of those. There's certain things that I've had to do in my life, and going and getting a master's degree in feminist theory was one of those. And it changed my life. It gave me a language for all of the experiences I'd had. And so that has made me who I am today and why I was attracted to the program. Plus, when I first moved to town, everybody said, you got to meet Margaret. You got to meet Margaret. You got to meet Margaret.
Margaret is an institution.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to thank my guests, Dr. Margaret Frimuth and Mindy Stokes, for coming into the studio and speaking about the Me Too movement, named by Time Magazine as the Person of the Year, for exposing the prevalence of sexual harassment and sexual violence, particularly against women in society today. Thanks, Margaret and Mindy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope the conversation continues. This was great.
Absolutely. Dr. Frimuth is the Vice President of Academic Affairs for Clatsop Community College. She previously served as Director of the college's Lives in Transition and Counseling Programs, and she is the founder of the Healing Circle, which puts on the annual Victory Over Child Abuse, or VOCA, camps, dedicated to healing childhood sexual violence. Stokes recently became the director of the college's Lives in Transition program and has taught courses in the college's Women's Studies program since 2010. She co-chairs The Harbor, a local nonprofit agency that provides advocacy, prevention, and support for survivors of domestic violence, sexual violence, and stalking. This is Perspectives, and I'm your host, Joan Herman. Perspectives was engineered today by Graham Nystrom. The show can be heard every other Friday on the stations of Coast Community Radio. You also can find show podcasts on the station's website. If you would like to contact me, send me an email to perspectives@coastradio.org. Thanks for listening.